Cinco de Mayo is coming up, and we are celebrating Mexican-American culture on the Patty Vasquez Show all week long because Chicago is home to some of the world's greatest Mexican chefs, including our next guest, who is the chef and proprietor of Salpicón. We have in studio with us Priscilla Sarkoff. Hi, Priscilla.
Hi, Patty.
It's such a pleasure to see you again. We met each other 10 years ago doing a taco tasting contest. Any restaurant that said they had the best tacos in town, Fox had us go and taste them, which was kind of a weird experience, wasn't it?
It was kind of weird, but also very interesting because we had a chance to go to different small taquerias in Chicago, which they were fabulous.
There were some of like just huge tacos,
yeah,
a lot of meat.
Burritos and everything else.
Uh-huh. And as a chef, you grew up in Mexico. Where are you from originally?
I am from Mexico City.
I was born
and raised in Mexico City.
Ah, my mother lived there for most of her life before she came here. And did you study cooking in Mexico City?
No, actually, I never went to culinary school.
No.
No.
Wait. Never?
No.
You're self-taught?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So around your family, I'm guessing then.
Well, this is kind of like a very short story.
Okay.
I was born in Mexico City, mm-hmm. and I am the youngest of three older sisters. So I was usually at home, and I grew up with my grandma and my mom. And I remember being 7 years old in the kitchen helping them, doing like peeling garlic and things like that. Obviously, they didn't want to do that. I want to be playing. But I learned basically the technique of what Mexican food is at home.
Okay.
Which means a lot of roasting chiles and roasting tomatoes, onions, garlic.
And to draw out all the most natural taste from those and the flavors from those.
Oh, yes. And I remember, again, when I was 7 years old, my mom used to take me to the markets in Mexico City. And she used to tell me, this is the good chicken. So be sure it's nice and fresh. And the chiles that you see here are the chipotles. The chiles that you see here are the fresh serranos. I mean, she actually taught me a lot. Back then, I didn't realize that I was in the process of starting my career.
Right. So why didn't you pursue culinary school? What did you study?
Well, actually, my degree is in history.
So is mine.
Oh, my God. We have so many things in common.
We do.
So my degree is in art history.
Okay.
And I went to college in Mexico City, and I was doing my master's in the Renaissance
mm-hmm.
when I met my husband, Vince, from Chicago,
okay.
which is Irish.
He's Irish. We do have a lot in common. My father was Irish. My mother's from Mexico.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So you meet this Irishman from Chicago in Mexico?
Yeah, actually, yes, in Mexico, but in Cozumel.
Oh, so you both were on vacation.
Well, I was in vacation. I used to go there very often.
Mm-hmm.
And he was living there. He was living in Cozumel for 3 months. And he wasn't really trying to meet anybody, mm-hmm. but Priscilla came and we met each other.
Aww.
In 1986.
Okay.
This is a very scary story.
What's
we
scary?
Met at the end of March
mm-hmm.
in 1986, and we got married the same year in September.
Oh, so very
so
quick romance.
Very quick. Very quick.
But when you know, you know.
I definitely did.
Yeah.
Yes. So then I moved to Chicago, and I didn't know. I mean, my degree was in history. And I didn't know what to do.
Had you studied English in
no,
Mexico City?
In history.
But no, but did you speak English fluently at
no,
the time?
No, I used to say yes, no, thank you, you're welcome.
That's what my sister still does that. Dorita, she'll be like, hello, very nice to meet you.
Yeah, it was very much like that. But when I moved to Chicago, which is the only city that I've been living since I moved here because my husband is from Chicago, I really want to learn the city. I want to learn the language. The culture, and one of the most attractive things in the city for me was all the art.
Oh, sure.
The museums and the architecture, and I was just fascinated.
Oh, I love when people fall in love with my city.
Oh, yes, it's beautiful. Actually, it's my city, too.
Yes, it is. It becomes everyone's city. That's why I love it so much.
Yes.
Because everyone can call it their city.
Oh, definitely, yes. And then I start cooking more because I was missing my food, things that I grew up eating in Mexico, and the rest is history, basically.
It's like you were making your own comfort food to remind
yes.
you of home.
Oh. Yes.
So what do you mean the rest is history? You just started cooking for yourself, and then you open a restaurant?
Well,
there's a gap in there somewhere.
Well, kind of, because when I was 12 years old is when I decided to, oh, I love this rice. I want to learn how to make it. Oh, this is delicious. I want to make this sauce for me and maybe experiment, and instead of using it with the eggs in the morning. I want to use it for the beef in the evening, but how can I make it more interesting?
So you were experimenting. You were already a chef, just not professional.
Yes, no, never professional.
And what drove you to open a restaurant?
Well, basically because I was cooking more in Chicago, and I started working for Rick Bayless.
Ooh.
Everybody.
Can you dish? I'm just kidding. He's an interesting dude.
Oh, my God. He's unbelievable. I was with the Baylesses for 7.5 years. And that was a very, very great experience. But I never cooked in his kitchen.
You never cooked in his kitchen?
No, I never cooked. I was in the front of the house, which means in the dining room. Mm-hmm. When he opened his restaurant, Topolo Vampo, mm-hmm. I became a server there. And I was his personal assistant also.
Whoa. Well, yeah, I guess if you're going to be inspired to open your own restaurant, that's certainly a place to start.
Well, and also I was cooking a lot at home. Mm-hmm. And everybody, all my friends here, they kept saying, oh, can you cook some tamales for my party that I'm going to have on Saturday? So I was cooking at home those tamales and just kind of catering mm-hmm. in a way. Or if I used to make something for me or for me and my husband, and I have extra food, I used to give it away. So everybody just kept saying, oh, my God, this is delicious. You know, again, using the techniques that I learned for the Mexican food.
Wow. I love your story.
Thank you.
I love that it really comes from passion for the food.
It definitely does.
And you have this restaurant on Wells in Old Town. And my mom and my husband went there when I was still just dating my husband, Steve. Yeah. And one of my favorite moments was Steve took some of the salsa because you have several, three different types, I think, with the chips.
Depending on what they ask. Uh-huh.
And my husband took one and he started to just his eyes were watering. Uh-huh. He got really red and my mom started laughing at him. He's like, no, I've had hot. This is hot. And my mom started laughing and then she went to take one and then she was trying not to turn red. She was trying not to have her eyes water. She couldn't handle it either.
Yes.
It was a particularly hot salsa. But you know, it's one of those ones with the seeds, I'm guessing.
Probably with, yes, or something called actually salpicón. Something that I said that. Salpicón is also a sauce from the Yucatan area, mm-hmm. made with chiles habaneros, which are extremely spicy.
Right.
But you know what? A lot of people like that. So it's like we have them in the restaurant for when they want to have something spicier. Okay, here, this salpicón.
Good luck with that.
And it's actually the name of the restaurant, so it's one of the reasons we name it salpicón.
Well, that's what's wonderful about having a selection of salsas. If you can have the mild and you can have the little more, like some people love the taste of cilantro. Is cilantro something?
I love cilantro,
so
yes.
So why? What are the, and you come across people who just hate cilantro. I mean, they're just, and we get that, but the hatred for cilantro seems to be balanced out by as much love as there is for cilantro.
Yes, it's something that you like mm-hmm. or you hate. I personally love cilantro. I think it's a staple of Mexican food.
It is. Like the smell of it makes me, right now I'm thinking of the smell of it. I'm getting hungry. We are talking to the head chef and proprietor of Salpicón, Priscila Sarkov. Will you hang out with me for a few more minutes? I want to talk to you more about Mexican food and Mexican culture.
Yes.
Thank you. We're on the Patty Vasquez Show, celebrating Cinco de Mayo. Cinco de Mayo is coming up next Monday, and we celebrated every night for 5 days before St. Patrick's Day. And because I am also Mexican, in addition to being Irish, I wanted to do the same for Cinco de Mayo. And I have in studio with me the chef and proprietor of Salpicón, Priscila Sarkov. And we were talking off the air, you were saying that you don't necessarily have a Cinco de Mayo menu set up because you have Mexican food all the time.
Yes, but also, Patty, is you know, one of the common misconceptions in the United States about Cinco de Mayo mm-hmm. is that everybody thinks it's Mexican Independence Day. Mm-hmm. We celebrate Mexican Independence Day in September 16th.
Right.
Everybody here celebrates Cinco de Mayo. And you know what? I learned something. Like, through all those years, Americans look for excuses or reasons to celebrate.
Yeah.
Which is totally fine. You know, this culture, America is so eclectic. We have cultures from different countries. And like Bastille Day, you mm-hmm. know, why not? Let's celebrate and Viva la France.
Sure. Have a French loaf of bread.
Of course.
Have some cake.
Yes. Or wine. And then it's like, okay, let's do somebody's day. And it's fun and everybody's in green and everybody, not drinking green beer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everybody's celebrating. And now it's like, I think because Cinco de Mayo is easier to say than this September 16th,
right.
Everybody celebrates Cinco de Mayo. So, but in Mexico, it's actually a holiday.
Right.
But we don't party or celebrate like that. But there is always a good reason to have great margaritas.
Yeah.
Like we do at Salpicón, of course. Why not?
Just got thirsty.
I have great Mexican food. So
yes,
coming in a week, and I hope everybody will come to Salpicón and celebrate with us another holiday.
And what is the history behind Cinco de Mayo? Because I kind of know it, but I don't feel that I tell it the accurate way.
Well, actually, this is what it is. You know, Mexico have so many influence from other countries. We have the Spanish when they came. Mm-hmm. Then we have the French when they came, when they tried to conquer also Mexico.
Right.
And what happened in 1862 is when the Battle of Puebla, in the city of Puebla in Mexico, was a battle against the French.
Right.
And after few years of the battle, we won in Puebla.
Right.
And to celebrate, this is what exactly it is, like
Cinco de Mayo
in Puebla.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that is the story.
And that's what's great about having you in studio to talk about Salpicón is Puebla has a tradition of really rich in food because that's where mole comes from.
Exactly. Yes.
Have you been to, do you go to Puebla when you
Oh, yes. I love Puebla. It's very close from Mexico City, where I'm from.
Right.
And I had the opportunity to visit many, many times.
Do you remember what the little drinks are? They have like all these different little flavored drinks. Like you can get them in mint and like in chocolate.
Are you talking about pulque?
Yeah, pulque.
Pulque is something that also very unique.
Yes.
And it's, you know, they have, it's basically like a fermented drink.
Mm-hmm.
And some people don't like it too much. So we put it some kind of flavors. Of fruits. And yes, that is from Puebla. It's very delicious.
Yeah, that seems to work for me.
Something that you grew up with, or again, is like cilantro. Something that you like or you don't like, but very authentic and unique from the state.
And you have an extensive menu for tequilas. Do you, and I know, is that something that your husband kind of manages more than you do, or are you pretty well versed in what
we
goes?
We basically do both. I don't take credit about his wine list, which is very extensive mm-hmm. and very good. And we have, you know, people don't understand it. Mexican food is very unique, but also it can go great with wine.
Absolutely.
And they say, oh, how can you eat Mexican food with wine? It's, what can you, you know?
Yeah.
And in
they've
Mexico,
been taught the wrong way.
Unfortunately, no, but people are learning now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a lot of people, they come to the restaurant and they start with a little bit of tequila just to open your palate. And
then when other things, your heart, baby.
Yes, of course. And then when they start having their main course or something, they go for wine. We have a very, very good selection from 14 countries, and his selection is big. But I don't take credit about the wine list, but about the tequilas, it's something that I grew up with, actually.
And can you explain why your list of tequilas is better than the baseline of what people think of as, you know, Cuervo is not the baseline for how tequila tastes?
Well, Cuervo is probably one of the first tequilas introduced, in other countries besides Mexico. But I like some Cuervos, honestly, some of the high ends of the Cuervo tequila.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what we do, we serve super premium tequilas. It's not the tequila that you are going to be sick the next day because you abuse it. But something that I tell everybody, if you respect the drink, no matter what it is, the drink is going to respect you. If you're going to have shots of tequila when you were in college, the next day you're going to be sick,
mm-hmm.
no matter what.
Right.
But also, if you respect, again, the tequila and you drink good tequilas, you're not going to be sick.
And people, like you mentioned, they shoot tequila. There are ways to sip tequila. My sister, Dorita, she'll have three little glasses, and one has tomato juice, and one has a little bit of lime, and then the tequila drink. And she sips alternately like that.
Yes, you have to sip it, and the lime juice and the sangrita is actually the tomato juice called sangrita. It balance the flavor of the tequila and enhance it also.
Right.
I highly recommend to have that tequila when it's tequila blanco,
mm-hmm.
which is the silver also they call it, when the sangrita, which
sangrita.
Is a tomato-based drink. But also you can have other tequilas, even for after the drink. You don't want to mix it with anything else.
Mm-mm.
You have to save to flavor, to enjoy the flavor of the tequila, of the agave.
Right. And the thing about your margaritas, too, is that you have different a couple of different choices. Like, I like mine with the Grand Marnier. The hint of orange is spectacular with a nice tequila. Mm-hmm. And in that, not, when people use the lemon that, like, sweet and sour, that's just too strong.
No, it's too strong.
It has to be fresh.
Definitely. We squeeze our limes. I'm now speaking about the limes. Just, they're extremely expensive, but still we are using them in Salpicón.
Okay.
You know, people enjoy that, and this is what we want to give them, to give the people, they're very good.
Well, that's where you should be going to celebrate this week leading up to Cinco de Mayo, or anytime you want to get great Mexican food and great tequilas and a wonderful wine selection, they can go to Salpicón. What's the address for Salpicón?
Salpicón is 1252 mm-hmm. North Wales.
And the phone number for reservations?
312-988-7811. But you also can go to opentable.com and make reservations online 24 hours a day.
Oh, go to Open Table. Get that table for us for Cinco de Mayo or any day leading up to that, because it's going to be crowded on Cinco de Mayo.
Yes,
so
yes,
maybe,
we already have
so reservations. So go anytime. Yeah. So that's, thank you so much, Priscilla Sarkoff. And you can find her at Salpicón. This is Patty Vasquez on WGN.
Thank you, Patty. And viva Mexico.
Viva Mexico.
Listen to the Serrano Murciano Show this week.
I feel like we've talked about funerals 2 days in a row. I went to a funeral yesterday and had a unique experience, to say the least. Had someone give an embarrassing eulogy that was insulting to the deceased, which actually required apologetic phone calls today. Not from her, but from, I can't even go into the details. It was so bizarre and odd. She alluded to a beloved, the matriarch of the family as somewhat, she alluded to her as being like a racist, an anti-Semite, and all to tell a joke. And so my husband had to make phone calls. My other people in the family had to make phone calls. And it was kind of surreal and upsetting. And we were talking about people who pose the deceased at the funeral so that you can, I guess, see them in the last thing that they love doing. We have on the phone Lisa, who also has a story about a funeral. Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Patty. I have to tell you, night after night, your show just gets better.
Hey!
Kudos to you.
Thank you.
It's just wonderful. And I'm up late all the time, so I listen to you regularly now. But my story is this. I have, first of all, a hilarious mother. And she's pushing 70 now. And from the time I was probably in my early 20s, she has had this plan in place that when she dies, she is going to have a recording set. So when you kneel in front of her casket in order to lighten the moment, it's going to say, "Hi, how are you? Oh, my gosh, you look great. Good to see you. How are the family? How are the kids?" So you and I swear to God, I think if she could actually do it, she would. But, you know, this is her take on a wake. She doesn't want it to be, you know, something
maudlin.
You know, morose
or
maudlin. Exactly. And she wants it to be something about who she really is, because she's that kind of a person. But, you know, going back to posing people also, if you, like my family immigrated from Italy. My mother's father was born in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you looked at these pictures, literally, of people standing on the steps of the church after the funeral mass, posed with the casket open, kind of lying on, like they're almost kind of half standing up in the casket, and they would take these pictures and send them back to the old country.
Right.
So that people knew that they were indeed dead.
To see, right. It was like the original funeral selfies.
They were.
Yeah.
Great job on the show, Patty.
Oh, Lisa,
great job.
That's so nice. And thank you for sharing your story with us, too, because that's, you know, it is, I think funerals are fascinating. And I hope that your mother does that. Have her record it, you know? Then you like motion sensor. You could totally do that.
That's exactly what she wants to do.
Do it.
You know, I would just be standing up there, you know, greeting people, cracking up every 35 seconds.
I think it's a great idea. Go for it. I'll work on that with
you.
All right. We'll get the technology done. All right. Thanks, Lisa. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, people are doing that now. They take selfies at funerals. I guess they stand in front of the casket and take a picture with the deceased. My and the people who show up at funerals, it's weird sometimes too. There was a guy that owed my dad money, and I didn't know. I just went through all my dad's business cards. He didn't have like a Rolodex. He didn't have an address book. So the only way I could do it, and he had numbers. He'd written down numbers of other people he knew on other business cards. So all I could do was kind of go through everything and call as many numbers as I could find. And it turned out one of them was a guy who owed my dad money. Mike, I'm going to find you, just so you know. But he showed up at the funeral, and my mom said, he just came to make sure your father was dead. So that was always fun. And the thing about my dad's business cards, I wish I'd kept them because he always had a guy. My dad always knew somebody who knew somebody. And, you know, do you keep business cards, Ted? I feel like I have thousands.
I can't tell you the last time I received a business card.
Really?
I can't even remember.
Maybe do you just deny them? Or just people aren't giving them to you anymore?
No one wants me to know their contact information.
Don't find me. Yeah, I have a lot of business cards. People still hand them out. I still give them out just mostly so that people can find me on Twitter and Facebook. We have Ray. You're an ex-funeral director.
Yeah, the best funeral is a Chinese funeral.
What do they do? What's unique about it?
A lot of tradition, but here's what you do. When everybody gets a limousine. This is going back 20, 30 years.
Okay.
After the service, everybody jumps into the limo, and you go to the cemetery like 50 miles an hour. The whole theory is you're trying to beat the devil to get to the body.
Okay.
So, and then remember the old CTA paper ticket passes with all the little punch holes?
Yes.
In it? Okay. The people
Your transfers.
Are out of the, yeah, the transfer. The people are throwing these little pieces of paper out of the window so it looks like a parade. The devil has to jump through every little hole back and forth so you're delaying him to get to the body.
I love it.
Now, once you get to the cemetery, you bury him real quick. And there's no marking. And then you hand out a piece of candy. And the candy symbolizes a bribe to the people at the funeral so they won't tell the devil where the body's at.
Whoa. That's an interesting tradition.
First time I went to one, they said, shut up and watch. And, you know, my theory is let's put the fun back in a funeral.
Yes.
But my funeral is going to be a closed casket.
Okay.
And I'm gonna have a little sign on it. And I'm going to raise money. It'll say a dollar a peak.
Oh, that's wonderful. A dollar a peak. I love that.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully it'll be paid off by the time I after a 2-day wake or whatever.
Yeah. So. Well, it sounds like, you've seen so much that, you know, you've got a lot of experiences to go, this is how I want it done. That's so cool.
Okay. Take care,
Thanks, Ray. Have a great night. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
There's a colonial funeral home on Milwaukee near Nagel, and my dad used to hang out at the Dunkin' Donuts right there, right over by there. And one day we were sitting in the donut shop, and a hearse, one of the hearse from Colonial, broke down on Milwaukee Avenue on the way to the St. Alphonsus Cemetery. And I think it's St. Alphonsus. And literally, the guy was going to be late to his own funeral. No.
I would say the hearse breaking down is a bad omen, but really, what does it matter at that point?
Yeah, but you know, they always say, isn't that the saying? You would be late to your own funeral, this poor guy. All the procession had to go around him so they weren't tying up too much traffic on Milwaukee Avenue. I don't know. I really do find funerals to be fascinating. And again, it has to be about celebrating someone's life. Yeah, you know, obviously, there's you get so emotional. I remember watching my dad when he was a pallbearer at my great aunt Bernice's funeral. And my aunt Bernice was the last of 12 children who passed away. My dad's mom was the first of 12 to pass away, and she was the last. And it was the first time I really saw my dad crying and how, you know, because it is more than just losing that person. It's so much that frames your life, and you're reminded of all, you know, I think the things that you stand to lose. I think that's part of it. Hey, Dave, how are you doing tonight? Or this morning? Whichever side you are.
Awesome. super.
Excellent.
So my statement was, I was at a funeral for my buddy's dad. And, you know, the group of kids, we grew up all as teenagers, you know, from probably 10 to 15, we all grew up together. And one of the guys showed up in a tank top, shorts, and sandals.
No.
And said, it's laundry day. And this guy is a guy that was spoiled from day one. You know, in kindergarten, he was one of two kids, always had whatever he wanted.
Right.
And to show up like that was just such a
slap in the face. You know, say it.
Yeah, right. And it wasn't even my dad. And the dad, I mean, the guy was the father that died was a really cool guy to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a hippie,
right?
Okay, and plain and simple, but he was really cool to all of us. And for him to show up like that and use that lame of an excuse was, like you said, just a slap in the face. Not only, you know, to the family, but to anybody that was there was like, who is this knucklehead, you know?
Yeah. Did you want to tackle him before he got in the building? That's what I would want to do.
I wanted to punch him in the head, right, you know, when I saw him. And actually, funniest thing, he was the first person I ever punched in the face when I was a kid.
Oh, really?
It was like the first, I mean, you know, obviously, I don't know if, you know, if you ever punched anybody, but most guys, I'm pretty sure out there, remember the first person that they actually punched in the face.
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge commitment when you think about it. When you're throwing your fist out to somebody's face.
Yeah.
And that's the guy. And
you remember the rest of your life. Mine was,
the first thing that came to mind when I saw him was back in third grade when I punched you in the face. That's what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah. You knew were right in third grade.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yep.
But I, as always, you do an awesome show, Patty.
Aw.
And I love listening to you. So
I appreciate
have
that,
a good night,
babe. You too. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Yes, Keith, you wanted to add to the stories?
I actually had one of the band directors I had in high school. He died very suddenly my senior year. And somehow, despite the fact that he died very suddenly, his brother knew that at his funeral he wanted everybody to wear a Hawaiian shirt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, that's in tribute, though, because he knew that.
Yeah.
But showing up in flip-flops and a tank top and shorts, that's just...
Yeah, that was actually a request. So
the Hawaiian shirt, I think that would be festive. At their request, a bunch of Hawaiian shirts would be a lot of fun.
And there was an orchestra there playing Yellow Submarine.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought it was going to be like a luau theme. It wasn't Tiny Bubbles. It wasn't anything like that. All right. The Yellow Submarine. Now you have to start singing that for me because I kind of have it in my head, but I don't have all the words. No.
No, it's all right, but we can bump back with it.
Oh, yeah. Could you please do that? That would be lovely. All right. Well, I guess we have something to look forward to now, don't we?
Yeah. We all live in a yellow submarine. Yellow submarine. Yellow submarine. We all live in a yellow submarine. Yellow submarine.
Is that water in the background of that song? Is there water?
Yes, because there's a submarine.
Now I kind of want to go to the bathroom. It's kind of like one of those sound machines. It's a very cheerful sound. There's a lot going on in the song. Whoa! There's a lot going on in the song. I want to let you know about a live appearance I have coming up this Friday night at the Beverly Arts Center. I'll be performing Lipstick Mom for breast cancer awareness. We're going to raise some money for their walk that they have. And that's going to be, you can go to beverlyartcenter.org. There's some tickets available, but the whole middle part is almost all gone, all the like middle seats. But if you sit on the side parts, like there's a lot of front row seats that are still available. I don't pick on anybody in my shows. And I'd love to meet you at the Beverly Arts Center this Friday night for Lipstick Mom to raise money for the breast cancer walk they have coming up. And the show is at 8 p.m. You can go to beverlyartcenter.org. That's this Friday, May 2nd. And people always ask me why I don't go to the South Side as much. I do. Every year I'm at the Beverly Arts Center, and it's one of my favorite theaters. It's beautiful. Coming up tomorrow night, I'm very excited about a guest that we've booked. There's a woman making a movie about, she's making a documentary about fat shaming, and she started a campaign on Kickstarter, and she started getting a lot of hate mail, and someone actually made a parody video of some of her clips and really hateful stuff, gave her death threats and rape threats that, you know, just horrible things about her body and her image and who was she, you know, that she needed to lose weight and all these things. And so we're going to have her on the show tomorrow night. We're going to have Lindsay Averill, who has this documentary that she's trying to fund. And you can meet her tomorrow night because she's got this documentary is called Fatitude, and it's about focusing on body images and how the public image of, you know, in social media and movies is really doing a lot of harm to men and women alike. Because I have friends who say things about their bodies I think that it's compounded by the fact that we do focus on thinness. There is a healthy weight, you know, but we still think sometimes that people think that I'm, you know, they're like, oh, you're so thin. And I used to look in the mirror and think, and I'm about 145 pounds. I'm not afraid to say that. And that's somewhere in the healthy range. I'm somewhere between, and all my clothes always fit differently. I'm somewhere between a 6 and a 10. And every time I go shopping, and it's true. Why are you laughing, Keith? When I go shopping, a size 6 will fit me in one store and a size 10 fits me in another store. That's just the way it works, especially with dresses. And I'm actually curious about the new Star Wars that's coming out, because they have released the fact that the original cast members, Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, and Carrie Fisher, are reprising their roles. We know, we kind of get an idea how Harrison Ford looks. Carrie has had an interesting life. She's done a lot of different things. I don't think that she's fitting necessarily in the original outfit that she...
Probably no metal bikini in this one.
No,
metal. Maybe like the white robe thing she did have.
The draping that she had.
At the beginning of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
A New Hope, the first one.
Right.
Maybe she could do that. She could still pull that off.
Right. And Mark Hamill, he has had a great career. Yes, sir.
I will say that Mark Hamill, there was rumors probably about 4 or 5 months ago when all this, first started
these rumors
along,
mm-hmm.
that he was already getting in shape.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him. There were girls that were either Han Solo or they were Luke Skywalker fans. And I guess there was a whole thing about what that said about you, that Luke Skywalker was kind of the girls who like the dorks, I guess, the geeky guys, and the girls who like cool guys, the troublemakers, the bad boys liked Han Solo. And I liked Luke Skywalker. I also like Gopher from Love Boat. So, yeah, I did kind of like the nerds.
What about Gilligan?
I like Gilligan.
Yeah.
The skinny one's my yeah. Yeah. That's all in there. My husband says that he doesn't think that really reflects well on him. He's not really a fan of that. But didn't Luke Skywalker have Mark Hamill, didn't he have a bad accident after he made Star Wars in his Corvette?
Had it during.
During
it was
the filming?
Right between Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. That's why they kind of rewrote that opening scene on Hoth where he gets beaten up by that great big Yeti,
mm-hmm.
and they had to write that in because he had facial injuries from the car accident, and they had to write it into the script.
Wow. And there you go. And actually, that's a great opening, though. Kind of, it definitely was a different landscape and a different world they took us to. I don't know how I feel about the new Star Wars. Although it is J.J. Abrams, so he always does some great stuff. And this should be really fun. So they're excited to share the cast of Star Wars Episode 7. Director J.J. Abrams said it's both thrilling and surreal to watch the beloved cast and original cast and these brilliant new performers. Peter Mayhew will be in Chewbacca's Wookiee suit for a fifth film, while Anthony Daniels and Kenny Baker return as the robots C-3PO and R2-D2, respectively. How old are they?
Well, someone had said this today when that news broke. You got to admire him because he has to put like his entire high school class to shame because he's still in good enough shape to actually do that.
Yeah, no kidding. New actors to the Star Wars franchise include John Boyega, Daisy Ridley, Adam Driver, Oscar Isaac, Andy Serkis. I don't know any of these people. Dom Hall, Gleason, and Max von Sydow.
Andy Serkis played Gollum in Lord of the Rings. The little green guy.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that's what he does. He's like the CGI guy.
He's a CGI guy.
Yeah.
Whatever they need CGI'd, he plays that guy.
He played Caesar in the new Planet of the Apes movie.
Is there a movie that John Williams hasn't written the score for?
No, I think he's done
pretty much
everything
that sounds
but
great.
But I have a prediction.
You have a prediction. Uh-oh,
based
a prediction.
On the fact that Harrison Ford is in this thing.
Yes.
That I know in Return of the Jedi, the last one he made. He wanted his character, Han Solo, killed off.
He did? I did not know that. Okay.
And eventually they decided that was just too dark.
It'd be too upsetting for all the girls. They'd be crying.
First 5 minutes, he's killed off.
You think they're going to kill him off? All right.
Especially after all this buildup. First 5 minutes, he's dead.
They're going to kill Han Solo. Maybe a bounty hunter kills him when they're in a fancy bar with all the...
He won't shoot first and he'll end up killing him.
That's right. He should have shot first. Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Hi, have you seen the cast of the new cast?
I could not possibly care less.
That's exactly the prediction that producer Keith Conrad made when you came in studio, that you would not care less.
Couldn't possibly.
Not a fan of Star Wars?
No.
I did not know that about you. So far.
Empire is pretty cool.
Okay.
The other two suck, and the three prequels, please.
Oh, no, those I can't. Jar Jar Binks made me cry.
I actually like Sith. I thought Sith was pretty good.
Okay.
But
I love Star Wars. I think it was Star Wars Empire. I know everybody loves Empire, but I was little when it came out. So
I was
like,
12 when Star Wars came out, and it should be in my wheelhouse, and it wasn't.
Really?
All my friends went back and saw it 7,000 times. I saw it more than once in the theater simply because all my friends were like, let's go see Star Wars, and I'd be like, all right. But
did you was
the
it...
movie that captured my imagination that same year, mm-hmm. and the movie that I think is light years better is Close Encounters. That came out the same year as Star Wars.
Much darker movie, obviously.
But my problem is that movie, to me, Close Encounters is a movie that's more relatable on a human level. Because it takes place here in a real world. It takes place in Indiana, and then, and it's about families, and in that, it's not like
an obsession.
A bunch of knuckleheads in stormtrooper outfits in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And it, that.
Well, I think Star Wars had much more of a Wizard of Oz kind of quality.
Which is another movie I hate.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I love Wizard of Oz, so that, different strokes.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
By the way, they just put Close Encounters on Netflix. So by an astonishing coincidence, I just watched it over the weekend.
Yeah. And
for some reason, I had never made the connection before. But I just realized that at the end, he goes up into the spaceship and goes away. To his family, he just went crazy and disappeared.
Oh, yeah. No. That's all about family abandonment. There's a lot of that in Spielberg's movies. Jaws, hey, forget the wife and kid. I'm going off on a boat to have some fun with two other guys and get drunk and kill a shark. Is the eternal child. Spielberg's the eternal child. All of his movies,
Poltergeist,
are in some way. Well, he didn't direct that, but
he
did, but because he came on the set and Toby Hooper was screwing it up, so he.
Oh,
in his opinion,
is that why it's so all over the map? I did not know that there were two directors on that one.
Well, Spielberg's not credited.
Oh, okay.
Toby Hooper's credited.
I always thought it was Spielberg.
Yeah. That's another movie I can't stand.
I thought that there were elements when they're counting. One of my favorite scenes ever is where they're counting lightning and thunder. And there's that anticipation. I thought scenes like that were great.
Yeah.
And then it got out of control. It got stupid, where they're peeling off the face.
That's my favorite scene in the entire movie. That's my favorite scene in the entire movie.
It's scary. And then, remember the toys are, spinning around the room and one stops in front of the horse?
I don't know. But a lot of Spielberg's movies, he's this eternal, it's all about, I'm not going to fulfill my adult,
obligations
and my family obligations. I'd rather have fun. Cook.
Okay.
I want to be Peter Pan. I don't care about my family. I want to be Peter Pan.
That's a terrible movie.
But that's a thing in all of Spielberg's movies. So Close Encounters is about abandoning his family.
Okay.
I'm going to go play with aliens. Screw you guys.
I do need to make a list of movies that everybody loves that you hate. So that's Star Wars.
I don't hate
you
Star
don't
Wars.
Hate
I don't hate Star
you
Wars.
You do hate Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
It's the second worst movie ever made.
Ever? All right.
Ever made. Second worst movie ever made. And the most despicable character in film history.
Okay.
He's worse than Ralph Fiennes in
He's
Schindler's
manipulative
List.
And
in Schindler's
liar.
List. He's a lying, little, rich, spoiled, rotten, North Shore jerk that needs his teeth kicked in.
Is it because you identified so much with it, people that you knew from the North Shore?
No.
Those new guys like
he's
that?
I just think he's in, Ted agrees with me on this 100%.
Absolutely. Okay. I can't stand
He's
him.
A despicable character.
Okay.
Yeah. So Ferris Bueller is the second worst movie of ever made.
Okay, and what's the number one worst movie?
Natural Born Killers.
Oh, yeah, I don't hate that movie.
Horrible
okay, so we're good.
Movie.
I hate that movie.
Horrible movie.
Yeah, I did it a guy, let's call him Tom Daniels, who loved that movie, because that was his name. That's a running joke.
You dated a guy who
loved Natural Born Killers, and hence not my husband.
Yeah.
Yeah, although he's a radiology oncologist at the Mayo Clinic. I don't understand it at all, one of the top docs.
Well, a lot of people like that film.
A lot
of people like Natural Born Killers. It got great reviews.
It made me feel sick, dirty. I felt dirty, having sat through that movie.
Well, it's also, it treats its audience like morons. Yeah. Like, Oliver Stone tends to do that. I run hot and cold on Oliver Stone. I like some of his movies, and
what
I hate
JFK? What do you think about JFK?
Hate JFK.
Me too. Okay, good. So we got...
Yeah, I hate JFK.
Platoon?
Like Platoon until the final monologue when I was like, dude, I just watched the movie. You don't have to tell me what just happened.
You just ruined it for me. We don't want to ruin anything here. We'll just keep moving along.